This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And it's that time of year again, folks. The time of year when we talk about the Toastmasters International Convention. Ryan, what are the details this year?
This year's International Convention is going to be held August 21st through 24th in the beautiful city of Cincinnati, Ohio, at the Duke Energy Convention Center.
Nice. And what we do for these podcasts, for the next couple of podcasts, we will be interviewing each presenter, the presenters of the educational sessions and of...
And we're hoping also to speak with the keynote speaker and the Golden Gavel recipient.
Okay. And these interviews will be a few minutes long, maybe like 5 minutes or so, to give the presenters an opportunity to speak about the session, kind of sell it to us, to see what we want to go to, what we're going to check out, and just give us some good information about the session. So I hope you enjoy it. Sit back and relax, and here we go.
And joining us now from Nashville, Tennessee, is speaker, author, and entrepreneur Sam Davidson. Sam Davidson, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Sam.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Right, Sam. Now, we're going to be talking in a moment here about your session at the International Convention. What's your cannonball leading for maximum impact? But first, could you give us a little bit more of background and insight into who is Sam Davidson?
Absolutely. For the last 7 years, I've been president and co-founder of Cool People Care. And we're an organization who raises money for different causes around the world, mainly through our line of charitable t-shirts. And so that's given me my entrepreneurial background, which has given me a chance to speak a lot about that topic, making a difference, changing the world, and leadership as well.
Very good. Very good. Now, I keep trying to figure out how this cannonball is going to fit into your session, Sam. So what's that all about? What's your cannonball?
Unless people want to, we're not planning on going to the pool together and jumping off the diving board. But the point of departure for my talk are these two different meanings of the word cannonball. And one is artillery, kind of old school artillery that's very pointed, takes a lot of time, has a deep impact. And the other is the more playful one that we might be familiar with. And when you were a kid or maybe an adult, you went to the pool and did a cannonball and got a lot of people wet, but that impact didn't quite last as long. And so kind of one way I talk about leadership is through the idea of impact. And so is your focus as a leader to impact a few people for a very long time in a deep way, or to kind of get your cause and message out to as many as possible and then see what sticks?
All right, cool. And so how are you going to convey this message? Knock-knock jokes or what you got up your sleeve?
I usually don't rely on knock-knock jokes, but I tend to be a storyteller, and so I tell a lot of personal stories. I definitely have one related to this cannonball idea from college that a friend of mine did. I was there. I wasn't the one jumping off the diving board. But in my session, I'll definitely be telling stories related to impact. And what does that look like for us as individuals, as those of us who might be leading clubs, but those of us who also have leadership positions elsewhere in life, in our companies and in our communities.
Hey, Sam, do you have any stories about knock-knock jokes?
Don't have any stories about knock-knock jokes. I have a three-year-old daughter, and so she's not quite into the knock-knock jokes yet, but I know that's coming down the pipeline, so I'm going to have to sit through a lot of probably terrible ones very soon, although I don't know that I've really heard a great one yet.
I don't think there are any great ones. So, Sam, what's your dream for members who attend your session when they go back to their clubs and their districts? How do you hope they will be approaching leadership differently after attending your session?
Yeah, I would love for them to be able to measure their own impact when it comes to leadership in a little bit different way. And so instead of just looking at purely at numbers, or a lot of times in our lives, we look at impact in terms of dollars, that they can actually look at it in terms of people and depth of impact. And so I think in an organization like Toastmasters, the idea of cultivating future leaders, of having an impact long after you're gone, is very, very important. So we're really going to focus in on that. How can they, as a leader, develop future leaders who are going to come after them?
Wonderful. Sam, before when we were speaking, you told me you're from Tennessee, or we're speaking to you. You're in Tennessee now. You're not originally from Tennessee, are you?
You know, I was born in Florida, but I've lived here most of my life. And when I speak at a lot of college campuses, especially, and I get that a lot. People say, "Oh, you must have just moved there." But I've worked hard to keep the Southern accent off, kind of like how people work hard to keep off that extra 15 pounds. You know, I'm not ashamed of a Southern accent. It's just something that you know, I found I kind of steer clear from a little bit and try to be a little geographically neutral, let's say.
Gotcha. Very interesting.
Very good.
It sounds like a very good session, Sam. I appreciate it, and we look forward to possibly seeing you there at the Toastmasters convention in 2013.
Absolutely. We'd love to see a lot of folks there. It'll be a great time there in Cincinnati.
Great. All right.
And Sam, when exactly is your session?
Yeah, I'll be speaking on Friday, August 23rd at 1 p.m.
Very good. Perfect. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
And joining us now is distinguished Toastmaster and accredited speaker, Connor Kanin. Connor is a speaker, educator, author, raconteur, and humorist from Chicago, Illinois. Connor Kanin, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Hey, Ryan and Bo, good to be talking to you guys.
So, Connor, I used several words to describe you there, but I want to ask, raconteur, tell us, what does it mean to be a raconteur?
Well, a raconteur is basically a storyteller and a person who gets across their messages via good content, storytelling and imagery. And the Irish, I think, are pretty famous for their storytelling ability. Sometimes people say it's BS, but that stands for brilliant stories, by the way.
Ah, okay. Okay. So I understand your session title is The Gift of Gab for Toastmasters, and observant readers will notice, if they look at the agenda, that GAB is in fact an acronym. So what exactly does GAB stand for in the context of your session?
Right. Well, as you probably are aware, the Irish are famous for the gift of GAB. But the GAB I want to speak about at the Toastmasters convention is GAB is an acronym for goals, attitudes, behavior. And how, if you adopt and adapt this concept of goals, attitudes, and behavior in your business life, in your Toastmasters life, personal or professional, it will help you to effectively create what I say is a top of the morning experience and have people wanting to work with you and being productive with you. And ultimately, you get good results because you are living the gift of GAB, goals, attitudes, behavior.
Hmm. Is your session on the communication or leadership track? It sounds like it could cover a bit of both.
That is a very good question, Bo. Which leaves me saying I'm not sure which one it is, but it could cover both. And well, when I speak to corporations and associations, I do speak to leadership on the gift of GAB, goals, attitudes, behavior, and effectively your behavior does create your brand. So I can bring in marketing and leadership into that. But also in terms of communication, I think for people to be able to get their message across, they need to have a clear goal, they need to have the right attitude, and they need to exhibit good behavior that will have people wanting to say, yes, I want to follow that person, I want to work with that person, and that person is a good communicator.
That makes sense.
All right.
That's unusual for me, mind you, but I'm sure.
Connor, I don't want you to give away the whole list of ingredients to your secret sauce here. But one of the bullet points on your session that particularly piqued my interest is the question to ask when things go wrong. And I'd love to hear a little bit about that, if you might expand on that for us.
Right. Well, my first response is when things go wrong, the question I ask is what the heck happened? But the question you should ask, though, when things go wrong, and it's a powerful question, and I give good stories and anecdotes about it. The question to ask when things go wrong is, what do I want my attitude to be? What do I want my attitude to be? And Ryan and Bo, you know, and all of our listeners know that things go wrong every single day for people. Maybe you might just stub your toe, hit your finger with a hammer or something like that, spill a cup of coffee or something more serious. But we all hit speed bumps and we all hit potholes. And if you can ask yourself the question, what do I want my attitude to be? When you ask that question, I don't think you say, I want to be angry, I want to be annoyed. When you ask yourself the question, what do I want my attitude to be? You answer it by saying, well, I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be annoyed. And when you answer it that way, I think you make some effort not to be angry and not to be annoyed. And I've got some very humorous stories and anecdotes that where I've used that question and has helped me a lot over my time here in the United States and out back in Ireland as well.
Right. I get a funny story about that too. One time we asked this guy a question and he didn't give us an answer right away and there was a big long moment of silence.
So you said, what the heck is going on here?
No, I said...
Or what do I want my attitude to be?
Exactly, yes. That's what I said. And I said, you know what, I'm going to have a great attitude about this and I am going to laugh, and we did.
Right, yeah. I mean, it is a powerful question. Now, I've got some, as I say, very humorous stories in relation to one of them includes being stopped by, as I say, one of Illinois' finest, which you could appreciate, one of the cops in the area.
Sure.
But also, I mean, just in the last few weeks, we had a lot of flooding here in the Naperville, Illinois area, and our basement got 5-6 inches of water. And as I was clearing out the basement, I was consistently saying to myself, what do I want my attitude to be? And basically, I said, these things happen. I don't want to be upset or annoyed about it. And I just kept working away, and the same with my wife. And it's a question that will really help people in Toastmasters when they get robbed in competition, because every Toastmaster gets robbed in a competition. And it helps Toastmasters when they're trying to go for their final speech or when they're trying to grow numbers in a club. Because if the club has the right attitude, you'll get people to come into that club.
Right. Very good.
Well, it sounds like great content that you've got in store for our attendees here, Connor. And if nothing else, to sit there through your session and listen to that wonderful Irish accent.
Right. Well, I do joke sometimes that I come from New Jersey, but no one actually believes that anymore.
Right.
Although one or two people have said to me, are you serious? But basically what I try to do, Bo and Ryan, is I try to provide good content with good storytelling, a lot of humor in it. And I think if you can bring humor to your messaging, people will feel better. And when they feel better, they're going to remember better what you said as well.
Our thoughts exactly.
Very good, Connor. And when are you going to be sharing the gift of gab?
The gift of gab. I will be speaking on the Friday afternoon of the Toastmasters International Convention at 3 p.m. And I look forward to everyone being there. I promise them good lessons, and I promise that they'll be leaving with a smile in their face and a spring in their step, knowing that the gift of gab will help them create a top of the morning club experience, personal and business experience.
What more can you ask for?
I could ask for a pint of Guinness as well, but I'm sure you guys aren't going to give me that.
Hear, hear. All right. Thanks so much, Connor.
Nice speaking
thanks
with you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care and keep up the great work. I enjoy your podcast.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Based in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Kent Maggard is a former professional athlete and banking executive. At the International Convention, he's going to be presenting a session called Hitting a Home Run in Leadership, a success story from the baseball diamond to the boardroom. Kent Maggard, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Kent.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Kent, tell us a little bit about your background, if you would. Understand, as I just said, professional athlete, banking executive. How did that all come to be for you?
Well, I grew up wanting to be a professional baseball player. As I tell people, when you're a young child and they ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? A lot of people will say, I want to play professional baseball. Nobody ever raises their hand and says, geez, I want to be a banker. But I've had the opportunity to do both. Was a pitcher in the Cleveland Indians organization for a number of years before some things got me out of the game. Got into banking strictly by accident, but had a long career in the banking world and have learned a lot from both in terms of, what I now speak about, the leadership and motivation of the people you deal with every day.
Very good. So tell us a little bit more about what you have in store for your session, Hitting a Home Run in Leadership.
Well, I think, one of the things that I've learned over my career, both in baseball and it really has been an interesting journey in that some of the things that I learned in baseball, how much they transitioned into the business world. So I've really realized that motivation and leadership of people is really critical to, the success of any team or any organization. So what I've tried to do is take stories and some of the things that I've learned from my time and as a baseball player, as a professional athlete traveling the country, and also the things that I've took with me into the world of business, to just how to understand the different types of people you meet and to how to best lead them, how to best motivate them, you know, sort of differentiate a little bit between the management side of things and leadership. You know, one of the things that I talk about is you manage things, you lead people. Management's about logistics. It's about getting A then B so you can get to C. And leadership's about understanding people, how to get the most out of them so that at the end of the day, we all enjoy ourselves as much as we can and get the most out of people and get the most most benefit for the organization or the group that you're part of.
One of the bullet points for your session promises that you're going to talk about how to motivate and lead anyone. And I'm wondering if there are certain techniques that tend to work with just anyone, or do you have to kind of go to the person, figure out the person, and then find the technique to match what would motivate
You really got to understand the people. You know, one of the things that the illustrations I use sometimes are, you know, we'll take the same issue you're having with one person or a series of people that might be the same thing. Let's say that they, you know, you got somebody that asks a lot of questions, and you can learn how to lead people and have them grow in their position. You know, one person, the reason they ask a lot of questions might be because they're new to the organization, they're new to their role, and they just have lots of questions. There's a different way to motivate that person, or you put your arm around that person and you help foster them and guide them through what's new to them. Then you might have another person who, you know, asks lots of questions. You know, how do you lead that person? But they've been around a long time, and maybe it's just easier for them to come and ask you the questions as opposed to just going out and learning on their own. So that's a whole different type of dynamics for that person. You know, you have to say, you know, give them some leadership and say, you know, here's what you can do to go figure this out on your own. And rather than just giving them the answer right away, help to get them out on their own and let them learn on their own. And what that does is along the way, they'll learn different things other than what they came to you for the original question. The journey sometimes is where people learn. So even though you can have the exact same situation, there's different ways to lead people to help them grow in their role within the organization.
Right.
Kent, as you know, Toastmasters have been focusing on leadership for quite some time and probably heard lots of different talks and seminars on leadership. What is the unique perspective on leadership or the unique, perhaps, new behaviors or techniques that you're hoping your audience will come away with after attending your session?
Well, I think what I bring is maybe a little bit different is A, I've got a perspective from a lot of different points of view. I've been very, very fortunate over my baseball and banking career to have been exposed to a lot of different styles of leadership, some good, some bad. And what I've been able to do is sort of sift through the good and the bad and the ugly to bring out what I think are the most important aspects and some of the things that I think all great leaders have in common. And, you know, I call them guidelines to leadership because I really don't think there's a lot of rules when it comes to leadership. Nobody wants to have everybody has to have their own different style. But I'll go through the 8 or 10 different things that I think really, really make up a great leader. And like I said, I've been very fortunate to have been around a lot of really great managers in baseball and have been mentored by a lot of really good people in the banking and the business world and tried to pay attention along the way to learn from all those people. But there are, you know, like I say, just a few simple guidelines that I think make up great leadership. And we try to give examples of what those things are along with, you know, some good, insightful, hopefully stories that are, in some cases, make you laugh a lot. Some people maybe make you tear up a little bit on some stories we tell. But really try to make it very entertaining and pull from all the different things that I've been a part of over the years.
You going to throw in some baseball analogies?
Oh, absolutely. My presentation is a very even mix of things that I've stories and things that I've been a part of from my days playing baseball, and also from obviously the banking and business world. There are so many great lessons and so many great stories of management and leading people that I learned playing baseball, and it's amazing how well they translate into an office setting.
Sure.
It's just that there's a lot of similarities, and yeah, we absolutely get to baseball a fair amount, and we tie it all together.
Yeah, sometimes you got to take one for the team or win one for the Gipper.
That's right.
Sounds like you're going to hit it out of the park, Kent.
Good stuff. Kent, when is your session? What time of day?
I am up Friday, August 23rd at 4:30 p.m. in beautiful Cincinnati.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. And you take care.
Well, I appreciate you guys' time. Thanks for everything. We're looking forward to seeing everybody in Cincinnati.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Kent.
Thank you.
Roger Love, one of the world's leading authorities on voice, will deliver the keynote presentation during the opening ceremonies. He has written three top-selling books, created numerous audio programs, appeared as a regular on three major network television shows, and served as voice coach for the stars of the mega-hit television show Glee. Roger's clients include many celebrities, such as professional speaker Tony Robbins, TV host Susie Orman, and actors Will Ferrell, Angelina Jolie, and Keira Knightley. Roger coached actors Reese Witherspoon and Joaquin Phoenix for one of my favorite films, Walk the Line, as well as Jeff Bridges and Colin Farrell for Crazy Heart. Roger Love, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Roger.
Thanks so much. Applause even. Fantastic.
Well, Roger, we are very excited to have you as our keynote presenter for the International Convention, speaking on the importance of tonality. And maybe to kick us off, could you give us some background? How did you get started? How does one go about becoming a leading authority on voice?
Well, when I was 16, my voice teacher, I was taking lessons just for singing. I wanted to actually be an opera singer at that point. And he came to me one day and he said, Roger, I happen to be leaving town. I'm going to Banff to teach a masterclass in singing. Can you come over and take over the studio? Just teach a few lessons. I said, oh, that's fantastic. There's only one problem. I don't know how to teach. I only know how to be a good student. And he said, oh, don't worry about that. So I just show up after school. I'm 16 years old. My first day, I have Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, the Jacksons, Earth, Wind & Fire, Fifth Dimension, Bette Midler, Luther Vandross, Stevie Wonder, every single star that was on the radio, one by one, started coming in. And I was clearly out of my element, but I just went for the simplest thing I could think of. What if I sounded the way my voice teacher sounded? He had this big voice, lots of melody and lots of volume changes. And it just sounded like he was singing every time that he was speaking. So in my small brain, I said, I'll just pretend to sound like him and maybe nobody will notice the difference. 6 months later, when he came back, every single student wanted to stay with me because we found that I had a way of actually changing people's voices. So I stayed as just a singing teacher for 17 years. He and I partnered together and worked with incredible superstars during that time. And then speakers started coming to me, Anthony Robbins and John Gray and Susie Orman, amazing presenters and speakers. And they said, we want to work with you too. And in the beginning, I was like, no, I'm just a singing teacher. But then because the students were so incredible that were coming to me, I decided to really work very hard over the next years and create a technique that would allow my speakers to have the same type of influence and presentation skills and performance capabilities as I was already teaching the singers. And when I started doing that, and over the years since I've been doing that, it's been many, many years, I realized there's no difference between singing and speaking. And when a singer gets up on stage, they have incredible influence over their audiences. So why shouldn't a speaker have the same tools to do just that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine you must often hear from non-musical audiences, but I can't sing, so how can I possibly add singing into my speaking?
And I say that when you sing, you are using melody. So there's notes that are down here and notes that are up there. You're using volume changes because sometimes the song makes you loud and get up and dance. And sometimes the song is soft and makes you remember the first time your heart was broken. And there are tempo changes. Sometimes you're singing fast and sometimes you're singing slow. And sometimes you're singing high and sometimes you're singing low. But if you realize it, you have the same variables, what I call the building blocks of voice, the components of tonality, the sounds your voice makes aside from the words. You have the same musical ones. How loud, so volume, when are you loud and soft? How much melody do you use? Do you just stay on one note the whole time you're talking to everybody until they're bored to tears and they can't wait to get off the podcast? Or do you use a lot of melody? So you have melody and you have pace. Are you talking really fast all the time? Are you talking really slow all the time? And so people think you're a dum-dum because your brain isn't working as fast as theirs. So if you really factor it down to its basics, all speaking and all singing is about pitch, pace, tone, melody, and volume. And that the brain and the body doesn't differentiate between singing and speaking. And that if everybody spoke the way that I want them to, the people that were listening would be thinking, wow, that's so much more entertaining. It's like that person is speaking my favorite song.
Mm. You know, my daughter, she has this habit of ending every sentence and partial sentence with one of those upticks, which is very annoying.
Yes, and the truth is though, I applaud your daughter because she's half right, okay? In school, we're all taught to go down when we get to a comma or when we get to a period. And what happens is we're going along with all of this lovely energy and we get to a comma. And then we get to a period. And we're basically swallowing the last part of the word and we're going lower. And so what that's actually telling the listener is, I really want you to listen to me. Oh, wait a minute. I'm done with you. Wait, please listen to me again. Wait a second. I'm done again. You're telling them, don't listen to me, especially don't listen to the last word, every single word before a comma or a period, because it doesn't matter. That's why I'm swallowing it. That's why I'm making it softer. So she's right, but you're not supposed to go up every single time when you get to a comma and a period. Sometimes you're supposed to stay on the same note. So I'll be speaking and I get to a comma, same note, and then I jump back into my sentence and I get to another comma and I might go up, which tells the audience there's more coming and they're not off the hook and that there's going to be more stuff coming out of my mouth. And then they listen until I get to a period and I do the same note. Just that alone keeps people listening to you and engaged for much longer than if you end every comma and every period down, which, as I said, you're basically saying, oh, this word's not important, so please don't listen to me. Whatever you do, don't listen to those words.
Right. That's good advice. I'm writing that down, and I'm going to share that message with her.
I've got a question for you, Roger. Admittedly, this is a bit off topic, but as someone in your field, you must have noticed this, as I have, when I fly a commercial airline, as opposed to the private jets that I often take around the country. That's not true.
Podcast pays your way, doesn't it?
Yeah. That quite often the flight attendants will have a particular speech pattern that does end on a down note, something like, and in the event of a water landing, your seat cushion may be used as a, what is it, as a flotation device. And always kind of goes down at the end of the sentence. And I always wonder, do they teach that in flight attendant school or whatever it's called? Do you have any insight as to why that seems to be such a common scenario? Maybe you disagree with me and you haven't noticed as I have.
I don't, but what you have to remember is those things are all memorized, okay? Hmm. They don't get their plastic wings, such as it is, until they memorize those things, okay? So when you memorize things, most often you're listening to a recording of somebody else doing it. And you memorize their inflections the same way when I listen to Sting sing a song and then suddenly I'm singing it and I'm singing it exactly the way that Sting did it.
Right.
So a lot of the times in committing it to memorization, you know, they're learning bad habits, either going up too much or going down too much. And, you know, they're subject to whoever they were listening to. But the bottom line is this little melody, which we're talking about going up or staying on the same note, melody is just one key. My whole feeling is that people, speakers, have focused so much on content that if I have the right words to say, then I will be able to deliver an amazing speech and keep my audiences hanging on every word. But the truth is that there is so much evidence since the 60s, and even last week, Wall Street Journal came out with an amazing new article. But the evidence says that the words you use counts for very little of whether or not anyone cares at all what you say, but that the sounds you make, the tonality, the sounds you make aside from the words, the pitch, the pace, the tone, the melody, and the volumes, which is what I'm talking about, counts for at least 50% more important than the actual words. So we need to, it's great to have fantastic content. You can't just get up and go blah, 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 blah. But you must realize that the content is either being dramatically hindered or helped by all the rest of what you're doing with the sounds you're doing with your voice. And based on that, I'm just saying that a lot of people are standing up and speaking and they're delivering their voicemail message voice, right? They go home, they get a new voicemail, they just got a new phone, they're going to record the message, and they're like, here you go. Hi, this is Roger. I'm such a nice guy with a really nice voice. Please leave me a message. And they listen back, and it sounds like this. Wah, 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 boring, ugly. And then they're like, okay, ugh, that sounds terrible. Let me do it again. And then they do it again. They go, ugh, that still sounds terrible. 15 minutes later, they say, oh my gosh, I'm a successful person. I have a life. I have a job. I can't spend any more time working on this dumb voicemail message. I'm just going to have to settle. And then they just settle and they walk away. And that voice that's on your voicemail message is the voice that you are now speaking to everyone that you talk to your friends and your business associates and everyone that hears you speak. And that's your voicemail message. And you didn't like it. And why should they like it?
Right.
That's funny. There's your branding right there. That's funny.
And it's true.
Right. Right. Something tells me, Roger, you're not going to be presenting this session without some kind of audience participation, some kind of exercises for the audience to try out.
The audience and I will be doing all kinds of exercises that will find all the different parts of their voices and will help them learn melody. And I'll teach them all how to breathe. And then I'll bring people up randomly, someone who has a nasal voice. And they talk like this. And I'll show them instantly within 15 seconds how the nasality goes away. I'll bring up someone that has the airiest voice and just sounds like this. Like all the topics involve the bedroom and lingerie. And I'll show them how to sound big and thick and strong because they may be the CEO of that lingerie company. I'll bring up somebody who has no voice, that is completely hoarse and has lost their voice from screaming at the first part of my topic because they got so excited. And then I will give them their voice back in 15 seconds, showing that you never, ever have to lose your voice.
Wow. And you're going to do this without divine intervention.
Yes. It would really help sometimes if I was a faith healer. But all I can say is I do have faith and I have really good techniques.
Awesome.
Wow. That's great. Roger, are you going to be talking at all about any of your experiences working with some of these celebrities that I mentioned in your introduction and that you mentioned earlier?
Absolutely. When you see the end result of somebody like a Joaquin Phoenix who couldn't sing and then all of a sudden, boom, Walk the Line is winning every award, including Academy Awards and Grammys, and how it sounded in the end, you realize that you can go from not being able to sing to being able to sing like one of the most famous icons in history. And if I can do that, it's a piece of cake to take anyone who speaks and make them an infinitely greater speaker that has influence. And I'll show them step by step how it is. And yeah, I'm always working on amazing projects. I've got a new movie coming out with Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo and Adam Levine. And I'm working on a new ABC TV show. And I always share practical applications of people that they already know who they are and what they sound like so we can get a frame of reference. And the bottom line is my goal for that day, aside from just wanting everyone to learn things they've never heard before and have the most fun that they can have while they're learning it, is for them to realize, for every single person in the audience to realize that they are leaving money on the table by not finding their voice. That if they never find their voice, what's it going to do impactfully to their lives? How negative is it going to be if they never find the voice that really gets the public's attention? It's going to be horrible for their own lives. And then how many thousands and millions of people out there that don't get to hear their messages if they don't find the voice. You understand? So it's not only impacting you if you can't find your voice, it's impacting your ability to get your message, your content, your desires, your belief, your passions out to millions of other people. So I just want to make it so that people understand how easy it is to take all the best things that they know and that they are and to find a voice that delivers that to one person or millions of people.
I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Well, Bo, Wednesday, August 21st at the opening ceremonies, which begin at 6 p.m. at the International Convention. Roger, I think the Toastmasters attendees are in for a real treat with your presentation.
I agree. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye-bye. Right.
Thanks, Roger. And joining us now is Ed Tate. Ed Tate is an international keynote speaker, trainer, author, and entrepreneur, and he is also the 2000 World Champion of Public Speaking. Ed Tate, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, Ed.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you with us. So, Ed, you're going to be presenting a session at the international convention called The Story Finder. Could you tell us a little bit about what you have in store for our audience?
This is my number one program in the world for my professional clients. For example, I've had several thousand executives at Johnson & Johnson, the pharmaceutical company, go through this program. Every executive at Hallmark Cards go through this program. I just got a contract with Nielsen Ratings. And basically what I teach people how to do is find a story with a message or a lesson literally in about 10 minutes or so using one of three different storytelling methodologies, etc. It's a fun program. It's an interactive program. And as I mentioned earlier, it is my most popular program in the world. And here's a big promise I make for every single attendee. And it doesn't matter if you have content or not, but every person who leaves there, who leaves my session, will walk away with the seeds of a story they've never told before with a significant message or a lesson. So that's a guarantee I make for every single attendee.
That's pretty big. Pretty big promise to make. Do you ever get requests for refunds?
Never, not once.
All right, I didn't think so.
And probably the biggest thing about this program is I don't want people walking away impressed with me.
Mm-hmm.
I want them walking away impressed with themselves, and that's the thing I really enjoy about this program. I am not the star of this program; the audience is. And the way we have this set up and arranged is I will tell a story, and I haven't decided which story. I'm actually rehearsing a new one right now. But I'm going to have the audience analyze the story, and then I'm going to have them tell me what the elements of that story that made it successful. And then from there, I will share with them, again, one of three different storytelling models. And using one of those models, they'll actually create a brand-new story, something that's taken place in their life that they've never shared the story with before. Now, here are the rules. The rules are this. We have Toastmasters, and everyone has pocket stories, or they've had stories they've told at table topics. I want them to tell a brand new story they've never told in any setting whatsoever, something that's maybe happened just in the past several weeks. I want to prove to them that, A, stories are everywhere, and you can not only are stories everywhere, but there's a significant message or lesson that can be found from those stories.
And this implies even if you're a average guy with an average job and an average family, drive an average car.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't, here's something that's counterintuitive about storytelling. The more common the story, the better it relates to audiences.
I can see that.
The more dramatic, for example, most people can't relate to me winning the World Championship of Public Speaking. 9-month contest, anywhere from 20 to 30,000 contestants, I win the whole thing. Most people can't relate to that. What they say is, oh, well, that's great for you. You must be special. Well, as a motivational speaker, you don't want to be special. You want to be similar. However, in what I teach people right away is the more common a story, the more, like you said, like ordinary car, etc., the everyday things in our lives, those are the stories that, A, they connect very well, and they have significant messages.
So what you're saying, Ed, is you put on your pants one leg at a time, just like all of us, but you do it with a world-class trophy in the background.
Pretty much, that's the deal. Yeah. I have a piece of lucite. That's the only thing that separates me and you.
Now, Ed, one of the other bullet points on your session here is you're going to help the audience re-examine existing material and re-energize it. So whereas before you said you're going to have us tell a story that we've never told before, it sounds like you're also going to have us take some of these techniques and apply them to perhaps some of our standard stories. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Sure. Patricia Fripp, who is in the Speaking Hall of Fame, she's the first female president of the National Speakers Association, and she's also been on Toastmasters National Stage. I believe she's actually given a couple of keynotes on the big stage. And she says that sameness, S-A-M-E-N-E-S-S, sameness is the enemy of any speaker or presenter. I'm going to share with people about a half a dozen different techniques as to how to breathe life into your existing material, etc. I want you to examine your existing stories, presentations, whatever they may be, and we're just going to use some different tools. Obviously, one tool is stories. Another tool is using metaphors, analogies, startling statistics, etc. Anything, these are different types of tools that help you breathe life into existing presentations. I'm coaching an executive of a Fortune 500 company right now, and I'm a former executive in the computer industry myself. And again, the thing that makes most presentations boring is sameness, and that is presenting your information the same, talking the same, or presenting data, what I call a data dump, or a PowerPoint parade. That is one mind-numbing slide after another. If you're presenting your information and data the same, audiences have a tendency to tune out. And what I want people to do is have a variety in their presentations, and we'll show them about, again, a dozen tools to breathe life into their existing presentations.
Wonderful.
Sounds great, Ed. Exciting content you've got prepared for us here. When exactly are you going to be presenting your session?
It's going to be on Thursday, August 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Great.
All right, Ed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.